Hey, folks, we're back. Thanks for sticking around with us. It's the Jeff Ferris Show. We're live right now at Roots Up Radio at thejeffferrisshow.com and on Jerva Westerort Local Community Radio 91.1 in Stockholm, Sweden. As I promised you good folks, we're joined right now by a very special guest. Hazel Henderson is here with us by telephone. And as I said, founder of Ethical Markets Media, creator and co-executive producer of its TV series. She is a world read around the world as a journalist, as a writer, as a futurist, and an evolutionary economist. Hazel is here today to speak to us about this concept called neuromarketing. Hazel, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Yes, neuromarketing. Well, all of this, this is really, this kind of dirty pool marketing, mm-hmm. where the effort is to really manipulate people to sort of bypass their thinking forebrain, mm-hmm. and go right into the emotional centers, of the brain, and advertisers have used this for decades. And there was a point in the 60s where something came out called subliminal advertising, and that was actually banned. And what we have now is the sort of advertising where they're misusing medical machinery. I mean, wonderful medical devices like MRIs, you know, magnetic resonance imaging. Mm-hmm. And instead of using it for helping humanity, they're putting even kids into these brain scanning machines to try to find out how their brains light up with certain products and certain emotions. And, you know, to me, this is totally, totally dirty pool.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I, from my understanding, they're working beyond the conscious mind. They're trying to manipulate you in ways that you don't even perceive and understand.
Yes, that's the awful part of it. And, you know, it's this very new fashionable kind of economics, which comes from the behavioral sciences, mm-hmm. Where we realize now that human beings are not always rational, the way the old economic textbook said, you know, gee whiz, you know, it's up to people to decide what they want. Well, what we know now is that people are always of two minds, mm-hmm. and those two minds are the forebrain with all of the rational thought and the planning and the considering in a conscious way, and then there's the old reptilian brain called the amygdala, where all of our fight and flight kind of emotional responses are. And advertising just purposely targets that old brain to bypass our rational thought processes. You know, all of those ads, come on down to Florida, charge it on your credit card, you need this, you know, you're not cool unless you have a new car, all that kind of stuff. But the neuromarketing, the reason that our ethic mark decided to really put up this petition and our video there on Truth Out, and also on our website at ethicalmarkets.com, where people can sign, or companies can sign, a petition saying that they won't use neuromarketing. And we hope to be able to deliver, we're up to 700 companies and individuals have signed this petition now, and it's only been going for about a week. And we hope to deliver this petition to very publicly to companies that do use neuromarketing.
Oh, wow. And beyond just businesses using this, obviously this is something that could be abused by political entities as well.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, with this shocking Supreme Court mm-hmm. decision that came down about 10 days ago in the Citizens United case, where the Supreme Court, the two appointees by President George W. Bush, Justice Roberts and Justice Alito, have now shifted the court so that it's now really an ally of corporations rather than being a fair court. And so they passed this decision only 5-4, which just opens the floodgates for corporations to use advertising, spend all the money they want to, in our politics. So this ties in again to the need, you know, to have advertising get to higher standards. Mm-hmm. And when I founded the Ethic Mark back in 2004, it was really, the idea was to remind everybody how powerful advertising is. It funds most of our commercial mass media. Mm-hmm. And basically, it could be a force for good. And so we decided, or I decided, just to create this award for advertising that uplifts the human spirit in society. And we've given this award, we're coming up to our fourth year now. And, you know, we set the bar really high. I mean, the first campaign that we gave the Ethic Mark Award to was a wonderful campaign. And it was really all media, you know, billboards, TV, radio. And it was about tolerance, mm-hmm. and forgiveness. And, you know, it was just incredibly inspiring.
Wow. So this obviously they can, this stuff can be used. Well, advertising obviously can be used for good. Persuasion,
yeah.
Obviously you can do some positive things with it, but unfortunately there's no oversight on any of this.
No,
sort of
because
stuff.
What happens is that advertisers and media, as you know, hide behind the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the point is that the First Amendment is not absolute. You know, you can't cry fire in a crowded theater. Mm-hmm. And you can't use hate speech. So even the First Amendment, you know, has strings attached, I mean, you know, mm-hmm. to protect the community. But this is really the problem. You know, even the socially responsible investment groups that I work with a lot, you know, the mutual funds who screen out companies that manufacture weapons, mm-hmm. and unfair to their workers and all of the rest of it. It's been very hard to devise screens for advertising or for media companies, because they simply say, oh, well, you know, we're protected by the First Amendment. Go away.
Wow. It's, you know, I've spent a lot of time on the program speaking with psychologists and different people trying to understand the human mind, trying to understand why we have so much difficulty communicating with one another across the aisle in politics in this country. There's one doctor I speak with, a Dr. Bryant Welch, who's done quite a study of some of the things that are done on some cable news channels, particularly Fox News, and how they appear. Obviously, some of this stuff has been focus group. They figured about ways to trigger the reptilian part of the brain, to play on people's fears, of sexual differences, to go after,
yeah.
some really deep-seated things. But this is at a new level. This isn't about testing ideas, see what works, people on how they react. This is literally getting inside and getting pictures of people's brains,
yeah,
and
absolutely.
Learning how to tinker with them. This should be,
yeah.
this should be sending chills down people's spines.
Really, and particularly when it's used by politicians.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because, you know, when you think, for the last 8 years, we have been sort of all stampeded with the fear button.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is, it's a way of regressing a whole population, you know, just mm-hmm. the same way as if you run monetary policy in a inappropriate and bad way, you can regress a whole population into fear, cause them to lose their jobs. Mm-hmm. I mean, the kinds of things that are going on now that are totally unnecessary. And so, you know, the whole issue of how people, politicians and governments use propaganda, we're trying to sort of get to the root of the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
and help people understand how to resist these messages.
I guess that really is the question. How do we recognize it when we're being manipulated? If the things they're manipulating are beyond our conscious selves, you know,
yes.
how do we find the tools
to
understand
we
it?
Believe, you know, we believe that neuromarketing should be banned,
mm-hmm.
just the same way that subliminal marketing and subliminal advertising was banned in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was the way that was done was flashing images of a product,
right.
in that bypassed your forebrain. And the great experiment when they did this, and they were kind of showing it off, you know. They were in a theater in New York, as I remember, and they invited all of these journalists, and they were showing them what seemed like a movie, but underneath the movie, they were flashing the images of, I don't know whether it was Coke or Pepsi or whatever it was, but sure enough, at the end of the break, everybody went out, and a huge percentage of them, even if they'd never used that soft drink before, chose it.
Wow. But the difference here is that there is a way to catch them doing that. You simply slow down the film, and you can see the images in there.
That's right, and then you can see the image.
How do we track this?
That's right, whereas we think that neuromarketing is just beyond the pale. And it's really a terrible thing to use medical technology, which has such wonderful purposes for such, just for pure profit. And so it's the same way that we feel about advertising itself, that advertising can be incredibly uplifting, and it can educate people, and there's so many examples of that, and that's what we're trying to do with the Ethic Mark Award. It is, and it's amazing, because we have an advisory board of judges, a worldwide group, and these ad campaigns are nominated by people, from Europe and Brazil and all kinds of countries, and some of them are just plain beautiful. I mean, they're educating people about the environment, and it's just amazing what you can do with advertising. And so we just feel that it's time to use advertising, as I say, to uplift the human spirit in society.
And it's under, and also to not abuse this science. I remember seeing a few months ago, there was a couple of pieces on PBS that ran. One was with Oliver Sacks, and they were talking about all this new technology and how they were able to pinpoint certain aspects of the brain, and how we're coming to so many more understandings about our behavior, about how our body works, about how we react, and to suddenly learn, several months later that, wait, there's a dark side of this, as well, that it can be used for the ultimate manipulation, not just to sell us things we don't need, but to influence us to make us more acquiescent to, create a political environment where we're not even control of our own minds.
Well, Jeff, I was watching Frontline, a wonderful show on PBS, the current program, and at the end of it, they were showing what the military is now doing to recruit young soldiers. And, this goes way beyond the idea of paying recruiters, bonuses for signing up impressionable teenage boys. We know their brains are not cooked when they're 18. They're still not fully formed. And what they've done now, this is a thing they have in Philadelphia called the Army Experience. And it's like a video game parlor. And these kids are invited in there to play around with the shooting galleries and play around with all the video games. And it's wonderful that a lot of citizens have been picketing this thing and saying that, war is not a video game. And this is not a way to recruit our sons and daughters.
It's also... Is this something that's being sort of pioneered in this country? Is this being used other places around the world? Is this something we're exporting around the world? I spoke last week with Ethan Waters, who's written a book called Crazy Like Us, about how America is exporting certain mental illnesses around the world on behest, essentially, of the drug companies. He mentioned an example, Japan. All of a sudden, Japan in the last 5 years has had an epidemic of depression, and it was never part of their culture before until it was introduced by Americans. Is this something that where...
And that's to sell, antidepressants.
Right, exactly.
Drugs.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, well, I have not read that book yet, but, the whole thing is that this process of corporate globalization was really set into high gear during the 1980s by Ronald Reagan in this country and Margaret Thatcher in Britain. Mm-hmm. And basically the ideology was the free market and to deregulate everything and privatize everything. And of course we know what happened. It created the global financial casino. Mm-hmm. Which has now broken down. And, you know, I've been writing books about this this global casino and how I expected it to break down decades ago because it was so totally unstable. And when you look at what's happening today, you know, with these credit default swaps, which, as you know, are not really financial instruments at all. They're just basically bets. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you bet that your neighbor's house was going to burn down, even if you didn't own the house, you know, you could take out insurance on it, and so could all the other people on the block. Right, I mean, just imagine. And so what I've been following the last couple of days is the kind of financial meltdown which is going on in Greece, where they have, you know, a large debt-to-GDP ratio. And suddenly you realize, although there's no record of this because all of these credit default swaps are over the counter and they're resisting having the Congress put them on an exchange and make them transparent and regulate them. And so what we think is happening is that all of these financial firms on Wall Street and in London or wherever else are taking out these bets that the Greek economy will default.
Wow.
And I mean, when you realize that just for an abstract game of making money, which is all these credit default swaps are, that real human beings, you know, are losing their jobs and not getting paid and are going through all of the same kind of hardships that are happening in this country where people are losing their homes. And, you know, basically, it's one of these so-called financial innovations, which, you know, is not a financial instrument at all. I mean, I've been writing on my website at ethicalmarkets.com that credit default swaps should actually be banned. And if they are not banned, then they should be relegated to what they are, which is gambling, and they should be regulated by the state gambling commission. We don't mind people gambling, you know, but they shouldn't do it with finance.
Right. Well, I get so frustrated hearing the debate about finances and, oh, what do we do? How do we get out of this mess? As if we didn't have a system in place. We had the Glass-Steagall Act, which pretty much served us fairly well from the time of Roosevelt all the way until Reagan came along and deregulated the market. Simply putting Glass-Steagall back in place to make sure there's a wall between the banks that do want to gamble and want to play with money and play the markets and people's mortgages and investments in 401ks, and that those are protected and isolated. We had
absolutely
that in place.
Yeah.
It served us
no,
very
I
well.
Totally agree with you. I mean, to reinstate, you know, an updated you know, a version of Glass-Steagall is kind of job one.
Right.
And the other, which I have been advocating for at least 15 years, is a financial transaction tax. Because what we have to do is to downsize Wall Street and the City of London and all of this financial casino, because it got to really metastasize so that in this country in 2007, the financial sector profits were 40% of GDP.
Wow.
Now, an efficient financial sector, which is supposed to serve the real economy, should never be less more than 10% of GDP if it's efficient. Because, you know, what happened was that these people on Wall Street really got the idea that they were providing capital, whereas they're not doing that at all. All they're doing is to take honest money that somebody has earned on a business, you know, in the real world and Main Street, and they take that money and find somebody some place to invest it.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's no rules, you know, they can invest it all over the world. They can play the currency markets. They can buy these credit default swaps and bet on companies going bust or countries going bust.
That is the dangerous thing. They can bet and still profit on failure. As long as there's a transaction, it doesn't matter what kind of destruction they leave in their wake. They're still making a commission on it.
And here's the interesting thing. You know, the independents in this country and the people who are sort of defecting from both the Republicans and the Democrats are now really the largest political force in this country. And both the Democrats and the Republicans are becoming minority parties. And so the task really is how do we help guide this righteous indignation about the unfairness of the bailouts and the unfairness of the way the economy is run, and, you know, get it into some righteous channel so that we can really, restrain Wall Street, downsize the global casino, and, you know, bring the money back to Main Street.
Absolutely, yes. The some of the very things that the extreme right, the teabaggers, and that group are angry about are the same things that people on the left who are frustrated
exactly.
with the party system.
I mean, you know, I was just reading in Fortune that there's a wonderful article there about how Ron Paul on the right and Bernie Sanders, the senator from Vermont, who's a Democrat, are saying exactly the same thing.
Yep.
And of course, the same thing with Dennis Kucinich. So, you know, if President Obama, when he had first come into office, if he had said right away, well, look, job one is to make this economy more fair and, to restrain Wall Street, he would have had a coalition all across the political spectrum from left to right.
Right, but instead they didn't do that, and he chose to bring in as his financial advisors people who were part of who oversaw the problem as it arose.
Exactly, I have been calling for a new economic team. You know, we really do have to get Larry Summers and Tim Geithner out of there.
Yeah.
They're much too close to Wall Street.
Absolutely. What's specifically to Goldman Sachs, which seems to be at the root of a lot of these sort of busts and problems that our economy seems to go through in cycles.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that you're dead right. I think that Obama needs a new economic team because I think he's a good man and I think he's very intelligent. And, you know, he probably didn't realize just how hard it was going to be to chase those money changers out of the temple.
Right. Yeah. Good point. Hazel, where do people find this petition that you have?
They can find it if they go to www.worldbusiness.org and click on Ethic Mark, or they can come to ethicalmarkets.com and click on Ethic Mark, and it's also on Truth Out, which is it's truthout.org.
Yes.
And so we're urging people to come and join us with this, and hopefully we can make a dent in this problem.
It is a huge problem, and I think the more and more people learn about it, they will be as alarmed as you and I are by it, and hopefully people can rally around this. This is something that cuts through the left-right paradigm. This has nothing to do with with parties. This affects every single one of us.
It certainly does, yep. And, you know, it's all part of cleaning up our politics, getting the money out of politics, and having the government working for the people again.
Yep. Hazel Henderson, thank you so much for being with us. Folks, I put links to Hazel's work, Ethical Markets, and all the things we discussed today up on the website. You can click straight through and sign that petition and get involved. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Take care
now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, folks, we're going to grab...